Welcome to ABA Inside Trek, the podcast that's like reading in your car, but safer. I'm your host, Robert Perry Cruz, and with me are my fabulous co-hosts.
Hello, Rob. It's Diana.
And it's Jackie.
Hey, everybody.
Hi, guys.
Hi. So, ABA Inside Trek, for new listeners slash watchers, is a podcast where we talk about behavior analytic research based around a central topic, and we discuss it in some depth. So next week, we are going to be doing our full episode. This is a preview episode where we preview what we will talk about.
Preview! And give
you some nice citations so that if you'd like to read before you listen, you can
Which
do so.
Which we recommend.
We definitely recommend, mm-hmm. Yes. So our topic this week coming up is ethics in data collection.
Ethics!
Ethics. So for those of you who are listening to our show for continuing education credits, this will be an ethics CE.
Everybody needs ethics CEs, and it's so hard to get them sometimes.
Yes.
At ABAI, I stood in a line of like 100,000 people to get in a tiny, tiny room to get an ethics CE, and then I got turned away 3 times.
Wow.
So I never actually got, an ethics CE or a supervision CE, because they were like, let's put these in the tiniest rooms possible, even though every single person that is here needs those specific CEs every year.
Yeah. 1 year I went to renew, and how many do you need? 36?
You need 36 now. You needed 32.
Now you need 32. It was 36.
Okay, so I needed 36. I had like 75, and I only had 2 ethics. I had to find another ethics CE at the last minute.
Yeah.
I haven't seen supervision. Anyway, other than the 8-hour supervision course, I have not seen supervision past that.
Yeah. Well, don't worry. In the spring, Regis College will offer a brush-up in ethics for supervision.
Oh, what do you know?
Hosted by none other than me.
Oh.
This lady.
Pass. Hard pass.
I know, right? It will be 1 hour. Do not maybe buy. 2.
I think that sounds awesome.
Yeah, so there you go.
I might have to take you up on that.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
But in the meantime, our episode you'll be listening to next week is on ethics and data. And we'll be going over 2 articles, but besides going over those articles, we will also have a very special guest, Dr. Amanda Karsten,
who
speaks, if you've seen her speak, speaks very, very passionately about the subject of using ethical data and has a lot of really good terms she uses to get us thinking. I know I saw her talk over the summer at Endicott College. There is a talk on, it was a whole day of ethics.
Ethics conference.
Yes. And just kind of listening to, you know, being reminded of some of those key points, like, oh, continuous data. Oh, you mean I don't have to take momentary time sampling data every observation? I have actually a clock on my phone. I can take real duration data. It's just these sort of things that you sort of drift over time, or you just get used to your, this is how I take data. It's the same thing every time. And it was nice to get a nice review. So hope you all agree after listening to our episode.
Cool. What are we going to read?
Well, let me tell you. We're going to be reading 2 articles from Behavior Analysis in Practice. The first is a proposed model for selecting measurement procedures for the assessment and treatment of problem behavior by LeBlanc, Rates, Sellers, and Carr from Behavior Analysis in Practice 2016. And Practical Implications of Data Reliability and Treatment Integrity Modeling by Vollmer, Sloman, St. Peter, and actually, that's all 3 of them from Behavior Analysis.
There we are.
Behavior Analysis in Practice 2008.
Yes. Do you have the Carey and Bure citation on you?
No, I do.
We're going to read that one too. So it's Carey and Bure, JABA 2014.
Yes.
Which they're also looking at continuous data versus probe data collection.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Sorry. I forgot my pile of stuff.
It's okay.
That's okay.
No big deal.
So we're going to move into our errata section, which was originally to live up to the term when people would write in saying things we did wrong. And very rarely do people write in nasty things about how dumb we are. So thank you, everyone listening.
But if you want to, go for it.
You can. You don't mind. Yeah. It's just, you know.
I chose that term because I liked it, because it has the word rat in it.
Mm-hmm. I love rats.
But then it didn't end up panning out. But I think we could just expand it and call it errata, etc.
Oh, yeah. With a comma?
We could. Yeah. We could do that.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So in this section, we would receive emails, go over our corrections, but also if people send in emails related to topics we've talked about, topics maybe we should talk about, or just interesting talking points, that we can share them here on the show for further discussion.
Mm-hmm.
This is an email from Tamika, which is actually in reference to another email we received a number of episodes back in regards to, I think, tone of conversation in behavior analysis, specifically the tone of the show. And Tamika writes, "Hi, ABA Inside Track team. Today I was catching up on the podcast and I heard episode number 11, the preview episode. In this episode, you guys were talking about some errata, and one thing mentioned was a recent complaint slash criticism from a listener. The listener gave feedback that a previous episode may have been too casual or irreverent and didn't reflect well on our field. I just had to drop you all an email as soon as I got home because I couldn't disagree more. You guys responded to the criticism very diplomatically and with a high degree of respect, but I hope you don't think this one comment is how the podcast comes across. I have gotten a little bit of this as well. I have an ABA blog that leans heavily towards sarcasm slash silliness because that is my personality. To some, I make ABA seem a bit too simplified or easy, and I'm just not their cup of tea, which is very okay. But unfortunately, I think sometimes our lovely colleagues in this field can be a group of highly critical, condescending, and judgmental people, which is why we sometimes have a poor public perception. With such diverse backgrounds, I am sure all three of you can relate that for some people, the title BCBA means you're likely to be a jerk."
So, I hope not, but...
No, but I think Tamika's general point was the idea that a lot of times, and I'm sure this has happened to all of us, when we go into a room and we have lots of graphs and we have lots of data, if we're not careful, it is very easy to come off as a know-it-all or to think you are smarter than everyone in the room, and you are telling a parent who is trying to figure out how best to help their child that you know way better than they do because you've gone to a fancy school, you've received fancy training, and as a parent, they're sort of just getting in your way. And sometimes I think we've all done that. I know I've been to meetings where that has been a perception that I've given out, and sometimes I get that feedback and I'm able to repair the relationship, and other times I know that I've had parents that asked to not work with me anymore because they thought I was a jerk. And I don't think I was a jerk so much as I just was trying to be very, very precise in my language, and everything was very, very factual, and I didn't speak with a lot of emotion about the issue. Everything was very, here is what is happening, and this is what the problems are, and these are the ways we can go forward, and this is the problems if we do A and B. And I was really trying to just be informative, but
you missed the mark.
I missed it. Yeah, I didn't come off
right.
Yeah,
that's okay.
So has that ever happened to all of y'all, or do you always come off as a perfect mix of warm and fuzzy slash super smart sounding?
I can say the smart sounding may not always come across with me. When I first passed the test in 2006, I did kind of think I was a know-it-all. Let me just put it out there. I was like, ooh, I passed the test. I'm awesome. I'm going to be the best BCBA there is. And I had a lot of excitement and a lot of thrill for the science. And
as you should.
Yeah, as I should. But I executed it very horribly. So I didn't do what we should have done, you know, go in and develop repertoire with the team and, you know, listen to everyone. I only kind of half listened, and I was like, I know exactly what we're going to do. And I alienated some of the teachers that I was working with. I don't know if I prepared it, to be honest. But it did give me a really good eye-opening experience that I actually knew nothing. You know, and I always should be learning more.
Right. So they say that's the mark of a wise person.
Well, yeah. So it was, I mean, I hit bottom. Let me just say. Hit bottom, rock bottom. So that, I think, was a good experience for me to know that, you know, like, it won't work unless everyone's on board with what you want to do. So maybe we all need to hit that mark. Or at least then go in knowing that if no one's going to take data or no one's going to follow your procedures, they're not going to work.
Yeah. I have a couple of things I think to say, but one is that I go to a lot of meetings in different school districts, and often the reputation of being a BCBA precedes you. Mm-hmm. So before you even get a chance to present yourself, your data, or your case, sometimes other parties have already kind of written you off because you are a behavior analyst. And that can be really difficult to me because I try my best to be very open, very welcoming, very parent focused in those types of meetings, and I would want others to do the same in regard to me and what I have to bring to the table. So I think that that can be really difficult. My other point would be more to what you're saying too, is I think we spend a lot of time developing our skill set related to being behavior analytic, and in particular the language that we use is a whole language in and of itself. Right. And we spend a long time honing that skill and becoming really good. There we go. Good at speaking in behavior analytic language. And
I think it's a lifetime skill.
Yeah, for me. It really is. Yeah. And, you know, trying to become precise in that language, mm-hmm. is definitely a lifetime skill. But, you know, when you have first started to master that or come close to master that, you want to use it all the time. You're really proud of being able to talk about things in behavior analytic terms. And I think the next step is then to learn, when do I use this newfound language that I have, and when is it better set to the side?
Right.
And that can be a skill that takes a little bit of time.
Lifetime.
For all of us to recognize, you know, this is what one thing that's great about doing this podcast is we get to talk in behavior analytic terms and talk about the research and the articles that we really enjoy. But if I were describing this type of research to someone outside of the behavior analytic field, I would use different language and I would be describing things in a different way. Mm. You know, we don't expect to go to the doctor's office and have them describe everything that they're going to do to us in the terminology that they learned it in.
Right.
That would be extremely alienating and uncomfortable,
right,
for us, and we would leave not having any idea what was actually happening. And that's, we don't want to do that to the people that we work with either. That right. would be very alienating and uncomfortable.
Yeah. I actually have a few friends over the weekend that told me that they listen to our podcast when they're making dinner, and they are not behavior analysts.
Oh, yeah?
Huh.
Yeah, weird. And I was like,
that's okay.
Oh, okay. So, and they're like, yeah, and some episodes were like right there with you, like we know what you're talking about, and some we have no idea. And then we want to write in and say, we don't know what you're talking about, but we're also not behavior analysts. They're not even in the field of education. They're in, like, theater.
Wow.
Yeah. You can probably give us some different tips then.
Yeah, but it was, it's, so that's interesting that, you know, they have no background whatsoever in ABA, and sometimes they're like, we're just listening to your voice. It's like, that's kind of creepy, but I'm glad that you're doing it. But yeah, they have no clue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Our audience.
Right. They have no clue. And so there, if they were the parents of a child, mm-hmm. they would leave the hour-long meeting that we had not knowing at right. all what we talked about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, I think in terms of the show, and we mentioned it in that preview episode when we received that email, our goal was for this to feel like you are getting together with a group of colleagues and chatting about the research. And though we want it to come off as we know what we're talking about, this is a professional show, because for a lot of folks, you are using this as part of your continuing education credits. So you should be getting a product that is professional. But at the same time, we don't want it to just be an hour lecture from one of us every week. You know, that was a conscious effort in terms of the tone of the show. We wanted it to feel like you were hanging out with us and chatting about the research. Now, realistically, you can't talk back to us outside of sending us emails. By which time, I mean, the episode's over. We're not going to go back and re-record it to add emails in. But that's why we have these preview episodes, or one of the reasons is if people do have a topic, like Tamika did, that she wanted to bring up, we can go over it a little bit. So I think we've gone over that piece again. I know there was a great, John Ricciardi wrote a really nice sort of introduction in the program to the Babbitt conference, which if you're in New England is
coming up.
Yeah, it's like the main regional conference. Wrote a really nice introduction talking about how behavior analysts need to find that happy middle between being warm and fuzzy but also being intelligent sounding or precise with our language.
Science. Mm-hmm.
Right.
True to the science. I think that's good. And you know, again, because a lot of folks, I mean, if you've seen Pat Fryman talk, we should be doing more as behavior analysts. We should be much more popular because we use data, which is something that a lot of people in the world are really getting interested in.
Mm-hmm. Theoretically.
Yeah, theoretically. And we should be, since we have so much research to back up what we do, we should be the first line. Everyone should say, what do the behavior analysts think about this? And they don't, because if any of you have been to a meeting where you haven't been there to consult to a child about, consult about a child with autism, the first thing I guess you've probably been asked is, why are you here? This kid doesn't have autism, therefore you have nothing to add or say in the conversation. And you know, you hear that once or twice, you think people are being ignorant. You hear that over and over, and you realize it is a kind of a branding problem that we're facing.
Right.
Everyone at home, thanks so much for watching or listening to our preview episode to get ready for Ethics in Data next week with Dr. Amanda Karsten.
Yay! And thanks to Tamika for writing in.
Yes, thanks to Tamika for writing in. If you're interested in writing in, you can certainly post something on the Facebook page or email us at abainsidetrack@gmail.com. Online, we're ABA Inside Track. You can find us on our website. You can post comments there, send us a message on Twitter or on Facebook or through email. Thank you, Jackie, and thank you, Diana, for being here yet again.
Just hanging out at the table.
That's right.
Me and my friends and you at home. I kind of feel like Mr. Dress-Up a little bit. You guys don't know who he is.
Is that Mr. Rogers?
Mr. Rogers. But Mr. Dress-Up is the Canadian version.
Oh,
the version of Mr. Dress-Up. But Mr. Rogers, so I really should have a cardigan that I can put on. Oh,
there you go.
A work cardigan. And then a leaving cardigan, and then you can watch me tie my shoes.
Do you know his mom made those?
His cardigans?
What? Yeah. Huh? Yeah, I read that on the internet, and every time he put them on, it was like saying hello to his mom. It was like their special little thing.
Oh, goodness, nice. I love him.
I know.
They used to do
this
that.
This is Mr. Rogers, I don't know.
I know, Mr. Dress-Up didn't wear that. Mr. Dress-Up didn't do that, he just had puppets as friends.
Oh, okay.
And they went to Never Neverland, Puppetland. It was pretty nice. His best friend was Casey, and she lived in the treehouse outside, and she was a puppet. If anyone likes Mr. Dress-Up as much as I did, you should write us in.
You would have had to be from up at the top of America or in Canada,
Canada. Yeah, I was on TBC. So I watched mostly Canadian young TV shows.
Fabulous.
I know. He was good, though. Him and Mr. Dress-Up. I mean, him, Mr. Dress-Up and Mr. Rogers probably were best friends.
Maybe.
They could have been.
I'm going to look it up, actually.
Yeah. It was a small world of children's educational television.
That's true. No, it was actually pretty big. I watched like 4 shows, but we won't go into that.
Well, back in the day. That stuff's old. Like the 50s, I think. 50s, 60s. I think it was the Ding Dong School. I might be totally wrong. And it was sort of a teacher of a class, and she would talk to the audience. So she'd be talking to the kids.
It's called the Ding Dong School?
Maybe. I don't know. I read it in... the book on Street Gang, which is a book about Sesame Street.
Okay. And I forgot that you love that book.
It was a good book. And I want to say that she would also tell them to buy things, but that might not be true. Maybe that's a Simpsons joke.
I don't think that might be.
I have no idea.
But anyway.
Remember to buy Camel cigarettes,
kid. I think that was a Simpsons joke. But anyway.
All right. Well, everyone, we'll see you here next week. But until then, keep responding.
Bye. Bye.